Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever time you're listening to this. Happy Friday and welcome to a new episode of The Chilling. I apologize for my absence. I've been busy adding another episode to my weekly podcast about wrestling called The Turnbuckle Post. And I've been busy with the holidays and, you know, everything else that comes along with this time of year. So I do apologize that it's been since Halloween since I last recorded. Today I have for you a story of 8 feet tall. It's a Japanese urban legend slash creepypasta, written and posted by an anonymous source. So we don't know the veracity of it. It could be true. It could be fake. As far as we know, I'm skeptical about a lot of things, but I won't say anything's impossible. So that's what we're going to discuss today. And it's a story that's already been written. That's not something that I've prepared. And I do apologize again. The production time on this show takes a lot longer than my other one. My other podcast is more shoot from the hip. It's not as structured. It's not as, you know, organized. There's not as much research. It's a lot of, you know, current events and opinions and, you know, history that we already are aware of. And that's, like I said, that's all about wrestling. So it's a little bit easier content to digest sometimes. I continue to apologize. Thank you for listening. I've seen my numbers go up quite a bit just on those first three episodes. So that's fantastic. And I really appreciate it. And like I said before, this podcast wouldn't be possible without the Scared to Death podcast by Dan Cummins and his wife, Lindsay. They've actually covered this story before, but I wanted to share it with my audience. I don't intend to steal anything from them. I give them credit for, you know, hearing it from them first. My next episode will hopefully be a Monsters Among Us about Richard Ramirez, with the, based upon the fact that the documentary The Night Stalker just came out on Netflix. It's a great 4-part documentary if you haven't seen it. It covers a lot of things about Richard Ramirez that I didn't know. As far as, you know, he abducted and assaulted and then randomly dropped off children, boys, girls, it didn't matter. And he's just an abject monster. And, I think he probably would have been something I would have covered later on, if I was going chronologically or anything, but just because of the current documentary and just the raised awareness around what had gone on with him, and in light of the new information, I just wanted to cover it and do my best to cover it. But like I said, that takes time, so I am currently doing my research on it, and definitely listen in. It's one of the best. I don't say best as in, you know, he's the best monster. It's one of the best stories in the way that it concluded, with the way that he was apprehended by the police. And I'm not going to go into spoilers. If you do know the story, you probably know where I'm getting at with it. But if you don't, you know, listen in next time. Next episode gets posted. I'll cover that and, you know, go into his apprehension, and we will get to celebrate how a monster was taken down by a community. But that's another story for another day. So this is the story of the 8 feet tall, or as in Japanese call it, Haka Shaka Kusama. I apologize. That's going to be a tough one for me to pronounce for the majority of this episode. So bear with me, please. So without any further ado, 8 feet tall. 8 feet tall, or Haka Shaka Suma, is a Japanese urban legend about a tall woman who abducts children. She is 8 foot tall, wears a long white dress, and makes a sound like po, 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 po. My grandparents lived in Japan. Every summer, my parents would take me there on holiday to visit them. They lived in a small village, and they had a big backyard. I loved to play there during the summer. When we arrived, my grandparents always welcomed me with open arms. I was their only grandchild, so they spoiled me. The last time I saw them was the summer when I was 8 years old. As usual, my parents booked a flight to Japan, and we drove to the airport from the airport to my grandparents' house. They were delighted to see me and had a lot of little presents to give me. My parents wanted to have some time by themselves, so after a few days, they took a trip to another part of Japan, leaving me in the care of my grandma and grandpa. One day, I was playing out in the backyard. My grandparents were inside the house. It was a hot summer's day, and I lay down in the grass to rest. I stared up at the clouds and enjoyed the feeling of the soft rays of the sun and the gentle breeze. Just as I was about to get up, I heard a strange sound. Po, 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 po. I didn't know what it was, and it was hard to figure out where it was coming from. It sounded like, almost like somebody was making a noise themselves, as if they were just saying, po, 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 over and over again in a deep, masculine voice. I was looking around, searching for the source of the noise, when I suddenly noticed something on top of the tall hedges that enclosed the backyard. It was a straw hat. It wasn't resting on the hedge, it was behind it. That's where the sound was coming from. Po, 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 po. Then the hat began to move, as if someone was wearing it. The hat stopped at a small gap in the hedge, and I could see a face peering through. It was a woman, but the hedges were high, almost 8 feet tall. I was surprised at how tall the woman was. I wondered if she was wearing stilts or some sort of huge high-heeled shoes. Then a split second later, she walked off, and the strange noise disappeared with her, fading into the distance. Bewildered, I got up and wandered back into the house. My grandparents were in the kitchen drinking tea. I sat down at the table, and after a while, I told my grandparents what I had seen. They weren't really paying attention to me until I mentioned that distinctive sound. Po, 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 po. As soon as I said that, both of them suddenly froze. Grandma's eyes grew wide, and she covered her mouth with her hand. Grandpa's face became very serious, and he grabbed me by the arm. "This is very important," he said in an intense voice. "You must tell us exactly how tall was she?" "As tall as the garden hedge," I replied, beginning to get scared. My grandfather bombarded me with questions. Where was she standing? When did this happen? What did you do? Did she see you? I tried to answer all his questions as best I could. He suddenly rushed out the hallway and made a phone call. I couldn't hear what he was saying. I looked over at my grandma and she was trembling. Grandpa came barging back into the room and spoke to my grandmother. "I've got to go out for a while," he said. "You stay here with the child. Don't take your eyes off him for a second." "What's going on, Grandpa?" I cried. He looked at me with a sad expression in his eyes and said, "You have been liked by Haka Shaka Soma." With that, he hurried out, got into his truck, and drove off. I turned to my grandmother and cautiously asked, "Who is Haka Shaka Sama? "Don't worry," she replied in a shaking voice. "Grandpa will do something. There's no need for you to worry." As we sat nervously in the kitchen waiting for my grandfather to come back, she explained to me what was happening. She told me there was a dangerous thing that was haunting the area. They called it Haka Shaka Sama because of its height. In Japanese, Haka Shaka Sama means 8 feet tall. It takes on the appearance of an extremely tall woman, and it makes a sound like po, po, po in a deep male voice. It looks slightly different depending on who sees it. Some say it looks like a haggard old woman in a kimono, and others say it's a girl in a white funeral shroud. One thing that never changes is its height and the sound it makes. A long time ago, it was captured by monks, and they managed to confine it to a ruined building on the outskirts of the village. They trapped it using four small religious statues called Izos that they placed at the north, south, east, and west of the ruins, and it wasn't supposed to be able to move from there. Somehow, it managed to escape. The last time it appeared was 15 years ago. My grandmother said that anyone who saw 8 feet tall was destined to die within a few days. It all sounded so crazy, I wasn't sure what to believe. When Grandpa came back, there was an old woman with him. She introduced herself as Kaysan and handed me a small, crumpled piece of parchment saying, "Here, take this and hold it." Then she and Grandpa went upstairs to do something. I was left alone in the kitchen with my grandmother again. I needed to go to the toilet. Granny followed me into the bathroom and wouldn't let me shut the door. I was beginning to get really frightened by all this. After a while, Grandpa and Kaysan took me upstairs and brought me into my bedroom. The windows were covered in newspaper and lots of ancient runes had been written on them. There were small bowls of salt in all four corners of the room and a small Buddha figure placed in the center of the room on top of a wooden box. There was also a bright blue bucket. "What's the bucket for?" I asked. "That's for your pee and poo," Grandpa replied. Kaysan sat me down on the bed and said, "Soon, the sun will be setting, so listen carefully. You must stay in this room until tomorrow morning. You must not come out under any circumstances until 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. Your grandmother and grandfather will not speak to you or call you until then. Remember, do not leave this room for any reason. Until then, I will let your parents know what is going on." She spoke in such a grave tone that all I could do was quietly nod my head. "You have to follow Kaystan's instructions to the letter," Grandpa told me, "and never let go of the parchment she gave you. And if anything happens, pray to Buddha and make sure you lock this door when we leave." They walked out into the hallway, and after saying goodbye to them, I closed the bedroom door and locked it. I turned on the TV and tried to watch, but I was so nervous, I felt sick to my stomach. Grandma had left some snacks and rice balls for me, but I couldn't eat them. I felt like I was in a prison, and I was very depressed and scared. I lay down on the bed and waited. Before I knew it, I was asleep. When I woke up, it was just after 1 a.m. All of a sudden, I realized that something was tapping on the window. Tap, 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 tap. I felt the blood draining from my face, and my heart skipped a beat. I desperately tried to calm myself down, telling myself it was just the wind playing tricks, or maybe the branches of a tree. I turned up the volume of the TV to drown out the tapping noise. Eventually, it stopped altogether. That's when I heard Grandpa calling me. "Are you okay in there?" he asked. "If you're scared, you don't have to stay in there all alone. I can come in and keep you company." I smiled and rushed to open the door, but then I stopped in my tracks. I had goosebumps all over my body. It sounded like Grandpa's voice, but somehow it was different. I could tell. I couldn't tell what it was, but I just knew. "What are you doing?" Grandpa asked. "You can open the door now." I glanced to my left, and a chill went down my spine. The salt in the bowls was slowly turning black. I backed away from the door. My whole body was trembling with fear. I fell to my knees in front of the Buddha statue and clutched the piece of parchment tightly in my hand. I started desperately praying for help. "Please save me from Hakashaka-sama," I wailed. Then I heard the voice outside the door saying, "Boo, boo, boo, boo." The tapping on the window started up again. I was overcome by fear, and I crouched there in front of the statue, half crying and half praying for the rest of the night. I felt like it would never end, but eventually it was the morning. The salt in all four bowls was pitch black. I checked my watch. It was 7:30 a.m. I cautiously opened the door. Grandma and Kaysan were standing outside waiting for me. When she saw my face, Grandma burst into tears. "I'm so glad you're still alive," she said. I went downstairs and was surprised to see my father and mother sitting in the kitchen. Grandpa came in and said, "Hurry up, we've got to get going." We went to the front door, and there was a large black van waiting in the driveway. Several men from the village were standing around it, pointing at me and whispering, "That's the boy." The van was a 9-seater, and they put me in the middle, surrounded by 8 men. Kaysan was in the driver's seat. The man on my left looked down at me and said, "You've got yourself in quite a spot of trouble. I know you're probably worried. Just keep your head down and your eyes shut. We can't see it, but you can. Don't open your eyes until we've got you safely out of here." Grandpa drove in front, and my dad's car was following behind. When everyone was ready, our little convoy started moving. We were going fairly slow, around 20 kilometers an hour, or maybe less. After a while, Kaysan said, "This is where it gets hard," and started muttering a prayer under her breath. That's when I heard the voice. Boo, 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 boo. I clutched the parchment Kaysan had given me tightly in my hand. I kept my head down, but I peeked outside. I saw a white dress fluttering in the breeze. It was moving along with the van. It was Hakashaka-suma. She was outside the window, but she was keeping pace with us. Then suddenly she bent down and peered into the van. "No," I gasped. The man beside me shouted, "Close your eyes!" I immediately shut my eyes as hard as I could and tightened the grip on the piece of parchment. Then the tapping began. Tap, 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 tap. The voice became louder. Boo, 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 boo. There was tapping on the windows all around us. All the men in the van were startled and on edge, muttering nervously to themselves. They couldn't see 8 feet tall and they couldn't hear her voice, but they could hear her tapping on the windows. Kaysan started praying louder and louder until she was almost shouting. The tension inside the van was unbearable. After a while, the tapping stopped and the voice disappeared. Kaysan looked back at us and said, "I think we're safe now." All the men around me breathed a sigh of relief. The van pulled over to the side of the road and the men got out. They transferred me into my dad's car. My mother held me close, and tears were running down her cheeks. Grandpa and my father bowed to the men, and they went on their way. Kaysan came to the window and asked me to show her the piece of parchment she had given me. When I opened my hand, I could see that it had gone completely black. "I think you will be okay now," she said, "but just be sure. Hold on to this for a while." She handed me a new piece of parchment. After that, we drove straight to the airport, and Grandpa saw us safely on the plane. When we took off, my parents breathed a sigh of relief. My father told me he had heard about 8 feet tall before. Years ago, his friend had been liked by her. The boy disappeared and was never seen again. My father said there were other people who had been liked by her and lived to tell about it. They all had to leave Japan and settle down in foreign countries. They were never able to go back to their homeland. She always chooses children as her victims. They say it's because children are dependent on their parents and family members. This makes them easier to deceive when she poses as their relatives. He said the men in the van were all blood relatives of mine, and that's why they had been sitting all around me and why my father and grandpa had been driving in front and back. It was all done to try to confuse Hakashaka-sama. It took a while to contact everyone and get them all together, so that's why I had to be confined in my room all that night. He told me that one of the little Izo statues, the ones that were meant to keep her trapped, had been broken, and that was how she escaped. It gave me the chills. I was glad when we finally got back home. All of this happened more than 10 years ago. I haven't seen my grandparents since then. I haven't been able so much as to set foot in their country. Afterwards, I would call them every few weeks and talk to them on the phone. Over the years, I tried to convince myself that it was just an urban legend, that everything that happened was just some elaborate prank. But sometimes, I'm not so sure. My grandfather died 2 years ago. When he was sick, he wouldn't allow me to visit him, and he left strict instructions in his will that I wasn't allowed to attend his funeral. It was all very sad. My grandmother called me a few days ago. She said she had been diagnosed with cancer. She missed me terribly and wanted to see me one last time before she died. Are you sure? Grandma asked. Is it safe? It's been 10 years, she said. All that happened a long time ago. It's all forgotten. You're a grown-up now. I'm sure there won't be a problem. But what about Hakashaka-sama, I said. For a moment, there was silence on the other end of the phone. Then I heard a deep masculine voice saying, "Boo, boo, boo, boo." That's all for this episode of The Chilling. Check back next time for Monsters Among Us, Richard Ramirez. And as always, trust the goosebumps on your flesh, the empty feeling in the pit of your stomach, and the hairs on the back of your neck. Because eventually, you might experience the chilling.